that, we've got company.
Hello.
Trust me, Hera, I'm excited. This is my excited face.
No, oh, this makes me so happy.
I like you. You don't fit in around here either.
All right, if I tag along?
More the merrier.
Get ready to be impressed.
You ready to be impressed, Tam?
I'm completely ready.
Bright suns, everyone. You're listening to The Geeky Bubble. I am your host, Jonah, and with me is the skilled bounty hunter to my elusive bounty. My mom, Maria.
Hello. Today, we're going to discuss the season 3 episode, Bad Territory.
Yes, that's right. So we have two different storylines happening in this episode. One is Omega and Crosshair, and the other one is Hunter, Wrecker, and Fennec. One story took place in space Puerto Rico, and the other story took place in space Florida. So, Mommy, what were your overall thoughts about this episode?
Puerto Rico all the way.
Yeah, Puerto Rico all the way. That space Florida was terrifying. With the space alligators.
Yeah. Ooh, those were big.
Yeah, they're called grizzards.
They're dinosaurs.
Yeah, they were like dinosaurs.
The episode was good. It really... They're starting to set them up for what's coming, you know?
Right, yeah. This is the calm before the storm. Yeah. Especially with what Omega and Crosshair were doing. It was very peaceful. And yeah, stuff is going to hit the fan. Yeah. So I am worried, to say the least.
You're not the only one. My poor heart cannot take it.
But yeah, it was a great episode. So I know in the last episode, Rex and Echo took a lot of losses. And it was mainly because CX2 was after Omega. And Omega's been feeling the weight of this, about what's happened, and wants to do something to help. But Crosshair and Hunter are both in agreement in that she needs to stay low until they can figure out why Helmaloc's after her and what his M-count experiments mean. Yeah. And so we often see in other shows, like, where someone is told not to do something, they go ahead and they do it.
Yeah.
Because they think that's the right thing to do. So do you think Omega will have enough of being told what to do and she'll take matters into her own hands? Or do you think that's not really her character?
That's not easy to predict.
Right?
It's not, because Omega is she's very smart, but she's also ruled by her emotions. So you don't know who's going to win in a situation like that. Who's going to, at the end...
Right, her logic or her emotions. Which one's going to take over.
So it's not easy predicting what's going to happen.
Yeah, because like I said, in most other shows or similar situations, there's usually that one character who, even though they're being told not to do this, they end up doing it anyway. Yeah. Especially if it's a younger character.
Yeah. With Omega, it's hard. It's hard to tell. She has done it before, but she's done it
with good intentions.
Yeah, with good intentions and not necessarily well thought out.
Mm-hmm.
So I will think that with everything that has happened, maybe she will heed the warning.
Yeah.
And if she doesn't, at least she would be more prepared. She will prepare herself.
Right.
For whatever she's going to get into. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
but it's not an easy guess.
Yeah, no. And the one example that comes to my mind is the season 2 finale, where, you know, Hunter told her and AZ to go see Echo, and she ends up going the opposite way, which then ends up leading to her capture.
And at that moment, she really did not think well what she was doing. She thought she could take on basically the Empire, you know? And I'm hoping that was a lesson for her. And that she next time, if she decides to do it, she will be more prepared.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we will see. We will see. But I also see her being very considerate of her brothers. Like, she knows that if she puts herself in a situation like that, they're going to come after her. I don't think she wants to put them in danger or anything like that. But then I also see her as, like, a self-sacrificial kind of person.
Yeah.
Like, she would do something if she knows that it could help in the long run or something like that. I don't know. She gives me that impression.
Yeah.
So we will see. We will see. So we get to see Fee again. And I love how Crosshair initially said, "Who?" And Omega replied, "She's a liberator of ancient wonders." And I just love that he gave her this deadpan stare. And she just sighs and goes, "Pirate. She's a pirate." So I know several episodes ago, we talked about Tech's death and yeah. Fee. And obviously, several months have passed by since Tech's death. So time has dulled whatever pain she might have felt. I do like, though, that she said, "Tech's brain was the data bank, not mine." So she still thinks about him in some capacity.
Yeah.
Do you feel disappointed that we never got to see her reaction or even Crosshair's reaction about learning Tech's death?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
There's something I wish we could have seen there. I wish it hadn't happened
because
off screen.
It's sort of like he wasn't important, that he wasn't a part of the team. Like out of sight, out of mind. Okay, he's gone.
Gotcha. Yeah, I could see that. I know a lot of people in the fan community feel that way. They feel that his death has been brushed over or brushed away very quickly, and there hasn't been a lingering discussion about it or feelings about it. So, I mean, I'm starting to feel it a little bit. At the same time, I do realize that months have gone by to make this story be where it's supposed to be. But yeah, I do wish that we could have seen little things here and there.
Yeah.
And so Fee tells them that Class 1 bounty hunters have been retrieving M-count targets for the Empire. And it's funny because I was watching this episode on my way to work, like walking up the stairs. And the moment I hear that, I'm reaching my desk and there's no one around. So I go, "Oh my God, Gunji." Because remember, someone had bought them.
Yeah.
And so we were like, is that the Empire? Who is this buyer? What's going on here?
Yeah.
Are we going to find out more about who this buyer was? And I think one of our guesses was the Empire. I don't think we knew about Hemlock at the time. No.
No.
But we now know that this could have been the Empire or Hemlock.
Hemlock buying
Force-sensitive M-count experiments. So that, or this other thought came to my mind, it could be someone buying Force-sensitives to sneak them away and into hiding. Like trying to be a few steps ahead from the Empire.
It could be, but with Star Wars, I'm always going with the bad one.
Oh, the bad one's doing...
the bad one always get everything all the way up to the last moment.
When
the good ones come up.
Yeah, I gotcha. Yeah, so initially I thought, oh my gosh, was that someone we know or could potentially be revealed who's been, you know, quote unquote, buying these Force sensitives to then eventually put them into hiding. But it sounds like it's more Hemlock.
Yeah.
Even way back in season 2 with Gunji, that this is something that's been going on since the fall of the Republic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And so there was another moment when Crosshair said, "Who?" And it was when they mentioned Fennec's name. And there was also an instance later on when Omega mentions how she'd been to Kashyyyk. And he said, "You've been to Kashyyyk?" And she said, "You've missed a lot."
Yeah.
And he gave this disappointed, "I know." Obviously, he has no love towards the Empire for what they did to him. But I feel like he's also upset at himself for missing out.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And I know some people were wondering why he didn't know Fee or why they didn't catch him up to speed with all these things that they've done. But I think Hunter and the others didn't want to slam him with so much information. I mean, he is already upset at himself for aligning himself with the Empire. You don't need to rub it in with all the things that he's missed, you know? And I was wondering if you would agree with that.
I also think they're being very active in going with Rex and Echo on these missions. So I don't think that they have really had time to sit down with everybody and make introductions, proper introductions, you know?
Right. I think they play it by ear. Whenever it happens, that's when we'll talk about it. Yeah. And I don't think it's something that they're just going to talk about unless it needs to be talked about.
Well, yeah.
And so... I know last time we were wondering if Hunter and Wrecker had noticed Crosshair's hand.
Yeah.
So it's great to know that it hasn't gone unnoticed, so that they're aware. And I really love how Hunter told Omega, see if you can convince him to get his hand looked at. Ignoring it will make the problem go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in that moment, I realize I am a lot like Crosshair because I'm sure I've got a few problems and I just want to ignore them because I hope they can go away on their own.
At that moment, it shows this. They depend on Omega for all things emotional.
Yes, they do, right? She's the connective tissue.
Yeah, they don't talk to each other. Which, again, could be another reason why they haven't said all the things that they have done. You know what I'm saying? Like, they have this thing that they I don't know how to say it.
I honestly wonder, too, if it's because he knows that Crosshair won't pay attention to him. Crosshair is going to dismiss him or be upset and storm off like he did with AZ. But with Omega, he's noticed that there's something there. And I think it's more of a strategic thing rather than him not wanting to do it himself.
I don't know. I think she's her emotional connection.
But yeah, that could be the case too. AZ suggested that perhaps the issue isn't physical. And Crosshair got upset when it was implied that it could be in his head. So that's when he stormed off. So I was wondering, why do you think Crosshair got upset at the idea of it being all in his head? Like, sometimes I think that could be a little bit offensive. Like, why are you saying it's just in my head? So, like, it's kind of, like, dismissive in a way?
We get a lot of that from doctors and medicine all the time.
Yeah.
Like, it could be in your head. And I'm not dismissing the fact that, yeah, it could be in people's head. Because I've been there. I've been in those situations. So I know it can be. But it's not always in somebody's head. Mm. And yes, it can be used as a tool for dismissal. Like, I have other things to do. Here, you find out, you know? Mm-hmm. With Crosshair, though, I think it is in his head, not because he's blocking himself psychologically, but because of his personality, who he is, the way he is. Sometimes people who are the way Crosshair is tend to go for more solid physical solutions.
Oh, I see.
You know, and he knows himself and he has gone through a lot. So he's not in a position to say, yeah, it is in my head. He wants control because that's who he is. He's a sniper. He has to have control, you know? But it could be that all the problems, all the experiments, everything, the stress causes mental problems. Mm. It is there. We know it. So that could be part of it. But I think that he got a little bit annoyed because of the fact that he's Crosshair, you know?
I gotcha.
That's his personality. What? No, it's not. I know.
I gotcha. Yeah, I think it also boils down to what Omega said, that maybe you're the one who has to fix it. And I know at one point we had discussed that too, that it's something that Crosshair himself would have to fix.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's easier. Practicing with a weapon physically is easier than figuring out what could be going on mentally.
Yeah.
Working on something physical, it seems much easier than doing something that involves the mind.
Yeah, physical therapy can do a lot. But if your mind, if your state of mind is not there, and it doesn't help and makes the physical therapy productive, you know, yeah. There's so much physical therapy can do.
Exactly.
At one point, you just have to mentally prepare yourself and push yourself to do what you need to do and to keep growing and getting stronger.
Yeah. It reminds me of that phrase, mind over matter.
Yeah.
And so, you know me. I had to go find an article about this. And so I found one on LinkedIn, of all places. I like LinkedIn. I know a lot of people give it crap, but but I like it. So this article is called The Power of Mind Over Matter, Unleashing the Human Potential. So yeah, I really liked how the concept of mind over matter was expressed in this article, which is why I'm quoting it. So the author said, at its very core, the essence of mind over matter lies in the mind's incredible capacity to sway the body and, to some extent, the broader world. This capacity often finds its channel through practices like meditation, the art of positive visualization, and mindfulness. A wealth of scientific research substantiates that transformative effects of these techniques on physical health, emotional well-being, and overall performance. Perhaps one of the most well-documented demonstrations of the mind's dominion is the placebo effect. When individuals wholeheartedly believe they are receiving genuine treatment, their bodies often respond as if they are indeed receiving it. This phenomenon underscores the profound connection between one's beliefs and their physical state. The mind's perception can trigger tangible physiological changes, such as diminished pain, accelerated healing, and heightened well-being.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, this is cool. This is hitting right exactly what Omega and Crosshair are doing.
So in a way, it is in his mind.
Yeah, yeah. And so this other article from Colorado State University's Columbine Health Systems Center for Healthy Aging said that the concept of mind over matter focuses on perception and how one's perception can change the physical world. Although this concept may be hard to grasp at first, it is straightforward. But can changing your mindset really provide that many benefits? The answer is yes. Simple changes in mindset can provide massive benefits in physical and mental health. Psychologists have been studying the power of positive thinking for years. Positive thinking does not mean that you have to clear your head of all negative thoughts or be filled with imaginative thoughts, but rather that you handle negative thoughts in a more upbeat, positive, and productive way. I just thought these would be cool to highlight.
Yeah.
It's hard, though. It's like what that quote said. It's not easy.
It's not. It's not an easy thing to being hit with negative outcomes on a constant basis and all the time trying to visualize them or accept them in a positive way, you know. It's not easy. But I'm one for the meditation part of it. Because that allows you to not necessarily accept the negative, but have your body take a break from it.
Mm-hmm.
Have your body and your mind take a break from whatever it is that is. And in that moment, help healing take place.
Yeah. And I like how Omega was being the older sister to Crosshair by telling him, you're still more capable than most. And, you know, she would put her hand on his shoulder. And I really loved how he was the one sitting on the ground while she was the one sitting above on the rock. Because obviously he's much taller than her. But I like that in that moment, he was really like a little small kid.
Yeah.
And she was being so supportive, and I like that Crosshair didn't brush her off like he did with AZ, and that he was willing to entertain whatever it was that she had in mind, even though he doesn't like most things. So
I'm not gonna like this, am I?
Yeah,
you don't like most things.
Yeah, true. Yeah, and so we get this beautiful shot of them meditating, and you know, he's curious as to like how she got this meditating routine and whatnot, and it was because of Gunji, and I really like how that connection was made. And I like how meditation has almost always in Star Wars been portrayed as something that the Jedi do.
Yeah.
So it was really cool to see it portrayed as something that anyone can do. Yeah. So trust, the word trust and just the act of trusting was brought up a couple of times during the episode. So Crosshair had to trust Omega. And Hunter and Wrecker had to trust Fennec.
Okay, that's a hard one.
Yeah, that was hard. And you often hear people say trust is earned, not given. So I like how we saw both aspects of that in this episode, because that was an earned trust between Crosshair and Omega, whereas Hunter and Wrecker had no choice but to trust Fennec.
that whole thing makes me very weary for the future, because Fennec, obviously, she's just in for the money.
Yeah, she's in for the money. Yeah. And something else about trust, that there's also a sense of risk when it comes to trusting anyone, because that trust can be easily broken. So I like that what we're seeing with Crosshair in particular is how the trust he had with the Empire, which had long since been broken, led him to a non-trusting place. And we saw that actually earlier in the season when Crosshair accused Omega of trusting too much. And she said, maybe you don't trust enough.
Yeah.
So I like how he's getting back to a place of being able to trust people he cares about, especially Omega.
Yeah. We'll see.
We'll see. Yes, we will see what's going to happen there with Omega.
I wonder how if we're gonna see Fennec again.
Yeah, I do wonder.
And in what role?
Yeah,
is she gonna still be the one to mess everything up, or is she gonna be like in the episode where she let Omega go, the one that basically saves the day? Because by letting Omega go, she saved the day.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, I'd be curious to see. I really wanted Crosshair and Fennec to interact, because they're both snipers. And so it would have been great to have a one-on-one between them. I also kind of ship them in my head. I ship Fennec with everyone. I ship everyone with everyone, to be honest. But anyway, and you know, speaking of Fennec, we learned that she hasn't done an M-count retrieval job herself, but she does know someone who has. Which is very interesting. I wonder who that someone is, whether that someone is the person that we think it is towards the end. I don't know. But what were your thoughts about seeing her again? I know you mentioned being wary, but I'm glad it was her and not some other bounty hunter, because I feel like we can trust her a little bit more.
We can trust her in the sense that if she tells you, this is what you're going to get, that's what you're going to get.
Yeah, she's very straightforward.
Yes. So. In that sense, the guys can trust that they're not going to be turned.
Yes.
Turned in or anything like that, because that is for first in the conversation, you know? But it also is this, it wrecks me emotionally, because we know that she's a bounty hunter. We know that she works for the bad guys. And
yes, yeah, I know. And
it's not going to end anywhere good.
Yeah, it's funny, because I was also thinking how it was really interesting to see how she didn't abandon them and kept an eye out for them.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, she obviously needed them for the job. She had expressed that before. But there wasn't a moment of her being arrogant and being like, oh, I can handle it from here kind of a thing. I was kind of expecting that, like her leaving them behind in the water or something like that.
No.
But thankfully that didn't happen.
That much we can trust on Fennec. The fact that if she tells you, I'm going to do this, she's going to do this.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I do not like at the end where basically she tattletales on them. She's, you know, like, if she could have asked about the M count without giving them away.
Yeah.
You know, I think in her head saying, you probably can track them. So I'm basically keeping to my word because I'm not telling you exactly where they are. But still, it's a betrayal. Come on, man. You know, like.
Yeah, it seems like I think you're making it seem like it's a betrayal, but I don't think that's where it's headed. I don't think it's that kind of a betrayal.
I don't know.
But we will see. We will see. But just a little bit, going back a little bit, I also like the implication that she's attempted to get this bug guy, whose name I've already forgotten, I'm sorry. But she's failed a couple of times because she mentioned how she's tried to bring him in, but he's been a slippery one to catch. She also experienced one of the boats capsizing before. And I know a few people brought up Fennec's level of expertise and how it would be great to see her as a novice at this point in time, because we obviously see her in the Book of Boba Fett, and that takes place, well, you know, years after Return of the Jedi, and that's almost 20 plus years from this point in Bad Batch. So, yeah, it would have been great to see her like a little bit, a few pegs down. You know? But at least it was great to hear that, you know, she wasn't able to catch this guy before.
Not on her own.
Yeah, and she obviously needed it, because in the end, the guy needed at least five stun blasts to finally go down.
And three people from different places.
I know, from different places, too. The guy was a tank. But yeah, I like that. At least we know that she's been unsuccessful in the past. And I also love how we got to see a little bit of Wrecker's explosive and ordnance skills.
Yes.
Of him being an expert in this episode. Because I don't think it's been touched on for a little while now.
No, he just makes things go boom.
Yes, he does.
In this one, he was trying to make things not go boom.
Thank you for explaining it just like that. That was perfect. Yeah, he wasn't making things go boom. Yeah. And last time we talked about how Hunter's skills seemed to be all over the place, and how some people felt he wasn't using them as often. And those same people, of course, were like, Hunter's skills have returned. But I don't think they ever left. I just think he's more focused and determined now. Yeah.
Having to worry about Omega is not easy in the skills. So it's going to have its toll.
Yeah. And there was also this conversation between Fennec and the guys where she said, apparently Omega got away from you too. And she also said, guess the Kaminoans were wrong about Omega being safer with you. I saw some people were thinking, oh, is she talking about Hemlock? I mean, she's obviously not referring to Hemlock capturing Omega because she wouldn't know that that happened. I think they're just leading her to believe that they somehow lost Omega to keep up appearances. But I like how her words still indirectly reference those events and how they could potentially lose Omega again.
Yeah, she knows how to twist the knife.
Yes, she really does. She really does how to get under someone's skin. And the conversation eventually leads to the topic of money. And Hunter said, money's not everything. And I don't know, has the word money been used in Star Wars? I feel like, I don't think this is the first time, but it's so rare hearing the word money that it caught me off guard for a second. I was like, wait, what? And yeah, he said, money's not everything, to which Fennec replied, that's because you don't have any. And I was like, oh, that's a straight up burn, my man.
Yeah.
But did you get the impression that he was affected, that affected him in some way? Because there was a slight pause on his part.
Yes, because again, it goes to resources. The only way they can protect Omega is if they have resources.
Yeah.
They used to get some and have some when they were with Sid. Now they're on their own again. And those resources are stretched out. Mm. So, yeah, it does give pause. Like, how am I going to do this? Everything is money. Everything costs money.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah. And it's funny because I mean, I knew that was the reason, but I found the conversation to be so curious. Like, how do they pivot into this conversation about money, of all things? But you're right. It's just the lack of resources, feeling strained.
Yeah, and I love her answer, because that is the answer of a rich person.
Yes, you know? It is. You don't have it.
And it shows why rich people, or people with lots of billionaires, go to the extents they go to protect their money. Mm-hmm. Because they have it. They don't want to give it away.
They don't
want to
give it up.
Because they don't want to be in the situation where they don't have it.
Yeah. The one thing I would say is just, I wish that there could be, like prior to this, a little bit of a hint here and there of them needing money. Because when this conversation happened, to me, it felt like out of place at first. Because it didn't feel like there were any instances before where money was
not directly
an obvious issue.
Not directly, but Fee did say that's gonna cost you.
Oh, I see. Getting that information.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Whatever they do from this point forward
needs money.
Is gonna cost them.
Yeah.
Because they cannot depend on Rex and the others.
Yes.
Rex and Echo are working with people who are putting resources, but they're doing it for a specific
cause. Yeah.
They're not gonna be just willing to give it away, you know, because they need it for their cause. So they're basically on their own when it comes to finding the things that they need in order to protect Omega.
Mm-hmm.
It's like protecting Omega versus protecting the whole universe, you know?
Yeah.
So it is part of the whole issue, because they're back to where they were when they met Sid.
I gotcha. Yeah. So they end up catching their bounty and they get back to the space station. But Fennec doesn't give them the information they need. She kind of gives them the runaround. I have the information. I just don't have it on me right now. and she says she'll be in touch. But then she goes behind their backs and contacts a mysterious person. And she said, I just finished a job with some clones. And I like how she emphasized that word and the way that Ming-Na expressed it. They were asking about the Empire's M-Count bounties. What can you tell me? And we only hear a muffled response. Doesn't even make any sense. Before she said, I'm sure you can track them down easily enough. So a bit of a warning for folks who aren't on Twitter all the time. And if you want to steer clear of spoilery speculation, feel free to stop here if that's what you prefer. But we'll be talking about, I'll be referencing some of the teasers and trailers and whatnot. So just fair warning. So some people have wondered if that's Hemlock or Cad Bane at the end. But I don't think it's either of them, because we would have seen them. They wouldn't have been shrouded in mystery. You know, we know what Hemlock looks like. We know what Cad Bane looks like. So, there was no reason to shroud them in that mystery. It could also be CX2, but I don't think he would have been hidden. We already know what he looks like, at least externally. So I think the person she's talking with is Asajj. I know some people highlighted that Asajj's theme is playing at the end, but Asajj's theme and Fennec's theme are actually very similar. Like, I went back and I listened to them. And I'm like, oh my God, they're like the freaking same. What's going on here? And I never noticed that until now. So yeah, it's not really great evidence to use, but this tweet from Christy Golden, who was the author of Dark Disciple, is pretty good evidence, because she posted a link to buy Dark Disciple, and she said, just in case anyone might want to read this, perhaps fairly soon. So yeah, I'm pretty like 99% sure that's Asajj. But now the question is Asajj good or bad? Like, is she going to find the Bad Batch because Omega is a potential bounty? Or does she want to find Omega because she wants to help in some way? Maybe she thinks that Omega is force sensitive because of the whole M-Count situation. So, yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. All I know about Asajj is not good.
I know, because you only watched the Clone Wars.
Yes, so I don't know Asajj in any other way or form or shape that is not bad. So I do not feel this is going anywhere good.
Oh, okay, okay.
Especially if she has been brought back for the Empire, to work for the Empire.
That would be interesting. I don't know. I don't know what were the means by which she was brought back. Like, how did that happen? Who did it? Was it Mother Talzin? I don't know. It's just like, so many unanswered questions.
We know they're playing with M-Count. The Empire is playing with M-Count. We know they have clones that they're
experimenting
in the clone business.
And they might
again
have Jedi.
And it's not necessarily clones to be used as soldiers, but basically Jedi clones.
Well, I don't know. Oh, they could have.
It could be, because that's basically the end that they're looking
the
for.
The end result.
How to clone Palpatine.
That's true, yeah.
So let's be real. They could have cloned Jedis.
Yeah, yeah.
So we don't know. And basing solely on the fact that of my experience with her, not good.
Not good, not good.
Not good.
I know. I mean, yeah, I really, the new episode drops on Wednesday, so if you're a fast reader, I really recommend it. But yeah, Dark Disciple really gives you a different perspective for Asajj. And actually, I think we got a hit, you wouldn't remember this episode, but there was an episode in Star Wars The Clone Wars called Bounty, funny, that had her, Boba Fett, and his little gang. And Asajj ends up doing a good thing in that episode. I think that was her, the start of her pivoting away from who she used to be. And so
these are different times.
Different times. Okay. Okay. my dream situation is that she is finding Force sensitive people and getting them into hiding. Obviously that dream also includes Quinlan Vos. But you know, I also have to be a little bit realistic and thinking, okay, maybe they didn't bring him into the fold for the Bad Batch, so it could just be her doing this. Or who knows, maybe the Bad Batch and Omega inspire her to be where she needs to be.
I don't know. I think you're reading too much to it, and you want something to happen.
You know,
that may not be what we're gonna get.
I know, and this is spoilers within spoilers. You didn't watch this, but if you watch X-Men 97, I apologize for the spoiler I'm about to drop. I mean, not in too great detail, but there was a reveal at the end of the second episode of there being a clone or something like that. At least that's the impression I got. So who knows? Yeah, like you said, maybe Asajj is a clone, and that would be a wild thing to to dive into, mainly because I had come up with like this fanfic idea of the Republic Commando series, which is a book series that I really love, and there was a Jedi character who unfortunately freaking died in that series. I was so disappointed. I was so sad. But then in my fanfic idea, I was like, oh, but what if the Empire had her DNA and made a clone out of her, and then she shows up randomly? And then when I saw that in X-Men 97, I was like, oh my God, it's my fanfic idea for Republic Commandos. So yeah, I've gone off on a tangent here. But yeah, it could be that she's a clone. And who knows, maybe this clone needs to rediscover where the original Asajj was going in terms of her projected journey.
Yeah.
So who knows? We're spitballing here.
It's fun.
You come up with crazy things and you bounce ideas off of each other. So one more thing. It's interesting that this episode was a bounty-related episode because next week we could potentially see the return of Asajj. And in Dark Disciple, because I love referencing this book, the way Asajj and Quinlan met was by capturing a bounty. It was a Vulpi, and a Vulpi has four arms. And so his name was Moregi, and he was slippery too. They actually had to like chase him throughout the city, and they lost him a few times. But what was interesting about that bounty in Dark Disciple was that Moregi had embezzled funds from this clan called the Rang Clan, because he wanted to support his struggling family. And because he embezzled those funds, the Rand clan placed a bounty on him. So it's interesting how money was also one of the aspects of that bounty hunter mission between Asajj and Quinlan. And there's probably no deeper meaning to pull from it. I just wanted to use the example here. I just wanted to highlight it. But a few other things that popped up throughout the episode. I know there was a reference to the Jedi Survivor games. I'm not familiar with those games because I don't have the systems to play. If I did, I would. But then I'd probably get dizzy because I'm that kind of person who gets dizzy with video games now. but I do watch certain things here and there on YouTube, especially about Cal and Marin because I ship them. But otherwise, those references went right over my head. So that's why we didn't dive into them too much in this episode. When Fennec said that the air would kill them, and that's why they had to wear their helmets, I was like, oh no, one of their helmets is going to fall off.
Yeah.
What's going to happen here? So that was the immediate thought I had when she said that. And then I also loved, it was
the kill gesture,
the hunter's kill gesture. I was like, oh my God, how is that so sexy?
Yeah.
What? This man is so sexy. But yeah. I love how we all wanted Hunter to be able to take off his armor to like dry off. I'm like, ooh, yeah, hopefully a shirtless Hunter time. That did not happen. But the kill gesture definitely made up for it.
Oh, God.
And so next week's episode is called The Harbinger.
Yeah, there we go. You see?
Bobby, your face when I said that. So,
yes, people, just so you know, I don't keep track of this thing. And even though I'm in Twitter, spoilers just go over my head because whenever I see something related to Bad Batch, I just keep going. I don't even look at it. I just keep scrolling.
Gotcha.
Because I know I don't want myself to be spoiled and I cannot stop people from doing their thing. So I just scroll.
Yeah.
So I don't know the next episode's title until Jonna says them.
Yeah. So your face. I was like, how's mommy going to react to this one? But yeah, your face said it all. So for some of the younger listeners in our audience, Harbinger means something that foreshadows a future event. It also means one that initiates a major change or give a warning or prediction of. So I don't think she is a bad thing. I think it might lead to something else in the long road.
You go with your positive thinking. I'll stay like crosshair in my dark mind.
But I also wanted to pull up this example. So the Merriam-Webster's dictionary had a really cool "Did you know?" section about the word harbinger. And I was like, you know what? Let me read this because it sounds cool. So it says, in J.R.R. Tolkien's The Fellowship of the Ring, four hobbits pursued by riders in black seek safe harbor in the village of Bree. Unbeknownst to the hobbits, the innkeeper of the prancing pony, Butterbur, was made aware of their potential arrival by the wizard Gandalf some months prior. When you consider the oldest, now obsolete definitions of harbinger, there are multiple harbingers in this section of the tale. The first is Butterbur himself, coming from the Anglo-French herberge, meaning lodgings. Harbinger was used as long ago as the 12th century to mean one who provides lodgings. Later on, harbinger was also used for a person sent ahead of a main party to seek lodgings. Those sent ahead would announce the approach of those following behind. The hobbits did not send Gandalf to Bree, but he did still herald their eventual arrival, making him a harbinger of sorts, which is how our modern sense of harbinger came to be used for someone or something which foretells a future event, such as the hobbits' arrival is a harbinger of the evil pursuing them and threatening all of Middle Earth. So yeah, I just thought that was a really cool Lord of the Rings reference in there.
Yeah. It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good.
I got you.
It's not good.
All right. And so one last thing, Mommy, I can't end this episode without talking about the romance we saw in this.
What romance?
Ma, didn't you catch the vibes between Fennec and Hunter?
What?
Or Fennec and Wrecker?
What? What?
The vibes were there. You just didn't pick them up. Okay, just admit that.
Okay, if you say so. What?
So that's it. That's it for today's episode. In our next episode, we'll be discussing The Harbinger.
Nothing good.
Nothing good?
Until next time, may the force be with you.
Always.